This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
The word transgender, at its most basic level, applies to someone who doesn't fit within society's standards of how a man or a woman is supposed to look or act. The word transgender may be used, then, to describe someone who is assigned the label female at birth, but later realizes that label doesn't accurately reflect who they feel they are inside. This person may now live as a man, or may feel that their gender identity can't be truly summed up by either of the two options we're usually given, male or female. They might feel like they're in between those two options, both male and female, or outside the two gender system entirely, neither male nor female.
The word transgender can also be used as an umbrella term, meaning it groups together a variety of people with different identities. The common link is that people under the transgender umbrella don't really fit within their society's standards of how women and men are supposed to look and act. In other words, they're gender non-conforming.
Dr. Gail Knudsen is a clinical assistant professor at the University of British Columbia's Department of Sexual Medicine and a consultant psychiatrist at the BC Centre for Sexual Medicine at Vancouver Hospital. Dr. Knudsen is also the medical director of the Transgender Health Program, and she's joining us on the phone today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for your kind invitation.
The terms gender identity disorder and gender dysphobia are sometimes used when referring to people experiencing gender issues. Tell us more about the diagnostic part of this process.
Well, when you look at the term gender identity disorder, it's a term that is in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that physicians use to diagnose gender identity disorder. And gender dysphoria is more a term used by people who are experiencing distress around their gender.
An article in the May 8th, 2007 issue of the Globe and Mail reported that transgender Canadians are coming out at younger ages than ever before, and that support groups for transgender teams report growing memberships. What have you seen?
Well, I've seen over the last 10 or 15 years in practice that the numbers have exponentially increased across North America and also Western Europe. Probably the numbers have increased by about fivefold. So we think that it's due to a variety of factors. One is that there is increased media. There also is increased number of sites on the internet that youth can access. Society is changing, becoming more liberal, and so people have the opportunity to come out. And also there's youth groups, as you mentioned, that people can go to either in their school if they have a GLBT youth group or Gay Straight Alliance, or in associated with mental health centers.
I'm wondering if we could just step back again and look a little more in depth at the diagnostic part of this whole dynamic. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, in order for a person to be eligible for hormones, or if they wish to have surgery, they have to have a diagnosis of gender identity disorder. And so what they need to do is be seen by someone that's a gender specialist and be recognized or use standards by the World Professional Association of Transgender Health. There's a manual that has been written, or it's called the Standards of Care, which clinicians in this field follow. And part of that is that the person has a diagnosis of gender identity disorder. So they have a long-standing cross-gender identification. They also have, as a child, but not necessarily everyone, have cross-gender preferences for toys, games, playmates, activities, that type of thing. And also they have a wish to live in their chosen gender role, which is different than how they anatomically are. And then this persists over time, and it causes a lot of distress within themselves and also with them trying to go through the world. Coupled with this is the stigma that's placed on transgender people in society, as they are, you know, quite often discriminated against.
You mentioned gender dysphoria. You told us a little more about that. And Jan had mentioned an article that we saw in our research for this segment in the Globe and Mail, suggesting that Canadians are coming out at younger ages than ever before. Now, how common then is gender dysphoria as let's say opposed to gender identity disorder, and you know what follows?
Oh, that's an excellent question, because we don't have accurate numbers in terms of people that are coming out. We have ideas about how many people we would see in a year with this, but we don't have numbers like per 100,000 or per 1,000, because the criteria changes in terms of how people identify themselves are we going by strict diagnostic codes, etc. So that changes as time goes on. So we don't have, you know, accurate numbers.
You're listening to People First Radio on CHLY 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca. I'm Kevin. I'm here with Jan. We're speaking with Dr. Gail Knutson about transgender issues, both medical and social.
Transgender youth have been experiencing bullying and violence, and transgendered people generally have experienced discrimination. What are some of those challenges, Dr. Knutson?
Well, what quite a few research studies have shown is that GLBTQ youth show an increased risk of substance abuse, high-risk sexual behavior, also mental illness in terms of depression, anxiety disorders, and suicide attempts. But what we found on an anecdotal basis is that when the youth are engaged in youth groups, especially in the ones that we have run in the Vancouver area, that there's significant change in terms of their well-being, like their alcohol or substance abuse significantly decreases, their quality of life increases, the depressive symptoms decrease, the anxiety symptoms decrease, because they have a greater sense of belonging.
I'm reading also from an article that appeared in the Globe and Mail dated August 20th, 2009, that says a 2000 study estimates between 25% and 40% of homeless youth identify as LGBT. Yet in Toronto, there are no emergency shelters or crisis services specifically designed for them.
I'm not aware of that statistic, but I know that that the people at Rainbow Health Ontario that are based in the Toronto area, they are the people that would be looking into that type of problem and trying to improve that. Especially there's another program in Toronto run by Lorraine Gale. It's the SOI program, and they also are trying to improve that situation.
What are some of the challenges faced by parents and siblings of individuals that are transgendered?
I think it all depends on what is going on in the family, what type of structure that the family lives within. I find clinically that if people have had gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender people in the family before that other person comes out, before the transgender person comes out, then I find it's usually easier for the family to accept the changes. If they are coming from a different type of background or a religious background that does not recognize that person's identity, then the challenges are greater and the family needs more support.
Is there an acknowledgement of transgender within the prison system?
Yes, there is. And we see it more in terms of the federal prison system, yes, and that there are guidelines around that.
In June 2009, Harvard University announced that it will endow a visiting professorship in lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender studies, and apparently that's believed to be the first of its type in the U.S. Dr. Knutson, you're the past president and a current board member of the Canadian Professional Association for Transgender Health. What is happening in Canada with regard to the study and the acceptance of transgender issues?
Well, CPATH is an organization that was formed by a group of healthcare professionals interested in transgender health in 2007 in Chicago, where the World Professional Association of Transgender Health was meeting. What we did is we got together and we formed a group from that meeting, and we now have a not-for-profit organization called CPATH that was formed in 2008 and became incorporated in 2007 and incorporated in 2008. We had our first meeting in Toronto with our first annual conference, and that was in June of 2008. And in June of 2009, we met, we had a satellite meeting in association with the WPATH meeting in Oslo. Our new meeting, or the next meeting that's coming up, we're very excited about. It's going to be in Montreal on April the 30th and May 1st. And that's going to coincide with the Trans Fierté conference, which is a community-based conference that will just be contiguous with ours.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Gail Knutson, we only have a moment left in our discussion today. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we close this up for today?
I think that having CPATH as an organization has been a good start in terms of bridging the gaps across healthcare or access to healthcare for trans people in Canada. If we have this type of organization, and we have approximately 100 members in our organization across the country, trans people that transfer from one province to the other have easier access to care because we can contact professionals in that area. And also, as the healthcare changes across the country, like we have our healthcare is provincially based, not nationally based, so we can influence policy from one province to the other. And by having a national organization, we have more strength to do this. Because in the end, our goal in CPATH is to increase access to care to the transgender community.
Thanks very much for taking the time to join us today. We really appreciated that.
Thank you so much for your invitation.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dr. Gail Knutson is a clinical assistant professor at the University of British Columbia's Department of Sexual Medicine, a consultant psychiatrist at the BC Centre for Sexual Medicine at Vancouver Hospital, and the medical director of the Transgender Health Program with Vancouver Coastal Health Authority. Dr. Knutson is also past president and a current board member of the Canadian Professional Association for Transgender Health.
We'd also like to acknowledge the Gender Identity Project's website for providing us with the information used at the introduction of this segment. And we want to remind our listeners that the Gender Identity Project is located in New York. And if you're interested and would like to find out more about this topic, simply Google Gender Identity Project.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.